everyone, John Wertheim. This is from Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. We are going to start off with a quick conversation with Petra Kvitova. We'd been talking about having her on, and she graciously agreed to spend some time. We had a bit of a Skype issue, in full disclosure. Petra is in Prague, and then she had to go practice, so this is a quick conversation, but always lovely speaking with her. A fan favorite for good reason, and she is now up to number 3 in the world. Came very close to winning the Australian Open, which would have been a comeback, dare I say, I don't know about commensurate to Tiger Woods, but would have been a stirring comeback story. We talk a little bit about that. We talk a little bit about her disappointment in losing. We talk a bit about Tiger. And again, a nice brief conversation with a justifiable fan favorite. Here's Petra Kvitova. You're taking a week off?
Yeah, I'm practicing, yeah.
How much time can you take off at once? Do you like this break in April where everybody seems to take a few weeks and lay low before clay?
I like it. I didn't have it last year, but I feel like sometimes it's really important to have a break because, you know, you are not a robot, and sometimes the body and the mind has to be clearer. So I played like much more tournaments last year, and I decided kind of to have a little bit off now, so that's why. Yeah, I like it.
I was thinking it's only the middle of April, but it's been you've had a lot to deal with this year. It's been a very busy year. It's been a very busy year,
yeah.
So far. How are you? How are you holding up? How's it going?
Yeah, it's you're right. I mean, I played a lot of tennis already this year, and it feels like, for me, it's like just April, and you know, I have a lot of already in my belt, and it's pretty interesting. You know, sometimes you are waiting for such a good result and play so many matches even before, and suddenly I'm already over it. So it's good, and I'm very happy for that, for sure, especially those finals I played, winning the Sydney and playing the final in the Melbourne. So I'm not complaining at all.
When you leave Melbourne like that, did you leave? What are your emotions after a tournament where you play so well and you come so close? Can you leave a major like that happy, or does it still sting a little bit?
No, I wasn't happy, to be honest. I mean, of course, I've been in the final, but on the other hand, I know how winning Grand Slam feels like, and you know, for me it was a great 2 weeks, but on the other hand, I lost in the final, which is not great for me, so I'm always kind of trying to be better, and I lost like that in the final because I'm hurt most. So, but you know, in a couple of days afterwards I realized how great the tournament was for me, and it was great, in the end of the day.
I'm wondering, did you watch the golf? Did you watch Tiger Woods on Sunday? Did you happen to watch that?
No, unfortunately, I didn't see it, but I saw just the end, you know, on the social media. I saw it, like, how he won, but unfortunately, I didn't see it live.
I was curious what your reaction was. I mean, obviously, the circumstances are very, very different, but as someone who also has made a comeback, what it was like for you to see that result that he made? What was
that
like for you?
I really admire him for so many reasons and so many years, and I feel like the Tiger Woods is a golf. I'm very happy for him. I'm always cheering for him when he plays something, so I'm really happy for him, definitely. And after 14 years, come on, it's a long, long way. And I know how that feels when you are trying to come back after such a bad thing, which happened in his life too, in mine too, and different kind of occasions. But in the end of the day, it is his comeback. So it's great that he didn't give up, which is the best thing which I can see. And it's great.
I got another question for you off of the news. When you played at the French Open, did you ever go to Notre Dame?
Yeah, I've been there just last year, in the end of the last year, when I took my niece to Paris, to Disneyland. So we were in the city as well, and we saw Notre Dame as well.
I thought you had told that story. I feel like this was one of these weird moments yesterday where I feel like the whole world came together to watch one news story. Let me ask you, the big story in women's tennis this year is obviously, I think we're up to 18 tournaments now with 18 different winners.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? What's going on?
Well, I think that it's not only in our case, but when we are not counting Roger, there is
a different the men too.
Winners as well on the male side.
Right.
So I think that we are just showing that, you know, everybody can just beat everyone, and the tennis is really open, and everybody is just really working hard, and there are really small differences between those players, and which I think it's very nice. You know, you are not bored as a fan, and you are really seeing everything and new faces, which is nice, I think.
It also seems to me that there's a... Would you agree with this? There seems to be more variety now than maybe 5 years ago. That you may have all of these different winners, and it's not, you know, it's not predictable, but you play nothing like Barty, and Sabalenka plays nothing like Kerber. It seems like you're seeing more variety on the other side of the net. Would you agree with that?
Actually, I don't think so, because we are seeing those variability for so many years already. We are not just showing up right now. So I think I'm playing similar game as Sabalenka, and I'm on the tour pretty long already. And Angie Kerber is there pretty long as well. So I don't think it's because of it. I just think that those variability is just there. And, you know, Simona Halep is playing different game as well. So I don't think it's just right now. No.
I was going to ask you about that. It occurred to me you're sort of halfway between, you're halfway between Andreescu and Venus. You're smack in the middle of your career. What's been the biggest change since you've come about? I mean, how's the sport changed, even since you won Wimbledon in 2011?
I think the sport changed for sure. I think it's mentally and physically tougher than it was before, or I just realized it maybe now when I'm a little bit older and I do have the experiences. But when I was younger, you know, I just played pretty fearless and I just didn't care about nothing. I just went on the court and didn't think who is playing on the other side. But you know, now I think you need to know a little bit the opponent as well and kind of play a little bit with the mind, like the tactical way. And that's what I feel that it's changed. You know, everybody knows how to play forehand and backhand and serve and whatever. But in those important points, when you have a break point or a game point, you just need to really play your best in that important point. And, you know, we are seeing so many comebacks in the match when you are down 5-2 or whatever, and you came back and win the match, which... The tennis is a beautiful sport because you never know until the last point it's over who's going to win.
So does that get easier when you have more experience and more wisdom, or is it easier when Petra Kvitova is 19 years old and maybe just goes out there and doesn't feel pressure? When is it easier to control the mental side?
I think when I was younger it was easier because I didn't think as much. Now I realize so many things. like in the game and in the life as well, and now I have those experiences and I know what I need to do and what I kind of need to do to be better and better. And in, you know, when I was younger, of course, that I did have my coach who were talking to me those things. But when you have an experience, that's the best. You can't buy them. So yeah, I think it's important.
Did you play other sports growing up?
Yeah, I did. I played volleyball. I played basketball. I played badminton as well. So I played lots of sports. I mean, I played something even before I played tennis, yeah.
So what? I mean, this is something we deal with in the United States a lot, right? That kids are young athletes and they're trying to decide what sport to play, and tennis tries to recruit as many as possible, but it's sometimes hard, especially in team sports. Why did you choose tennis?
Well, it was pretty easy because in Fulneck, when I was born, it wasn't really, you know, a sport to play for girls. It was only volleyball and tennis. I played basketball, but in the school afterwards. But like in Fulneck, we had only tennis. The volleyball wasn't like on the high level. And actually, I choose it because I like it. I like it more than the volleyball. So that's why I choose tennis.
What's your relationship with the sport right now? I mean, how much does your let's put it this way, how much does your relationship change during the course of a career? I mean, do you feel the same way about tennis you did 10 years ago?
No, I don't think so. I played tennis because I really enjoy the game, and I have always the passion, and I just didn't really think too much about it. Which I think changed now, because, you know, of course that I see it a little bit differently over the years, but I still do have the love for game. I still have the passion for game, which is the best. I had a moment in my career when I was so exhausted from everything, and I just need to have a kind of big breath and to breathe more easily than before. The pressure was just amazing. So, yeah, I'm seeing the sport a little bit differently as well.
All right, you've got to go practice. One last question. What are the expectations for Clay? What do you expect from yourself before Wimbledon?
Well, not sure. I mean, I didn't think about it. I do have some points to defend, especially in Prague and Madrid. But I don't really have an expectation, to be honest. I mean, the clay, I know I can play well on the clay, but on the other hand, it feels just weird for me sometimes to move it on. And, you know, I think I already did great job in the beginning of the season, and I just don't want to put any pressure on me again to kind of, you know, playing under the pressure is the worst. So right. I'm gonna try to enjoy the tennis on the clay, you know, on the sliding as well, and we'll see what will happen.
No pressure. It is always a pleasure. go practice, but thanks for spending some time. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Take care. All right. Thanks to Petra for spending some time before practice. Thanks, as always, to Jamie. Jamie, we should add that we had some communications issues in our new studio with the Skype and calling overseas. Petra was apologetic, and we will we'll get her back one of these days. But I thought a few things were really interesting about that in our brief conversation. One is, so often you hear players lose in the final of majors and say, oh, it's been a great week, and I need to take this positive energy forward, and they'll get to the last week, get to the last round of a major, and it's still a good tournament. That did not seem to be the case. She came very close to beating Naomi Osaka in the Australian Open final and was very upfront about the fact that she did not leave thrilled to have won six matches. Sounds like that defeat stung, which is not always the case with players who reach the finals of majors.
I was also happy to hear that she is open and willing to take a break. I thought that was you know, a good question by you to gauge how players feel about taking some time off, especially at this point in the season, and what, you know, what they do. I mean, she said she was going off to practice right now, so it's not like she's sitting around doing nothing, but it's always interesting to me to see the ebb and flow of the season and how the players are working through that.
I admit too, I went on a bit of a fishing expedition asking her about Tiger Woods, but I do wonder, we all know the backstory with Petra. I mean, again, I think one of the more remarkable stories this year is that days after reaching the Australian Open final, she's in a courtroom testifying and confronting her attacker, who is subsequently sentenced. I think that's a story very, very much, I think she understandably is not necessarily eager to discuss it, but I think that's a story that really speaks to a certain level of mental toughness that perhaps she doesn't get enough credit for. But I do wonder what it was like for her. She's in the throes of her own comeback, obviously completely different set of circumstances from Tiger Woods, but still there's some parallels, and a sports comeback is a sports comeback at some level. Did you watch the golf Sunday?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it.
What were you thinking?
I mean, first of all, I don't know if we're going to have a bigger sports moment this year. I mean, for 2019 so far.
It's mid-April.
I know.
We just filed our taxes, and you're
true.
Saying, no, I think you're probably,
I mean, you're probably
right.
It's incredible. I think this theme that is in tennis with older players, and, you know, we have the Roger Federers and the Serenas of the world who kind of keep amazing us. We all thought they were going to retire 5-10 years ago, and here they are still winning. So I think for Tiger to extend that theme is remarkable. Everything he's been through, personally, professionally, I think it's just a great thing for people to realize that you can come back, and you can do those things again. And as you said, for Petra, I think it was interesting to hear, you know, she didn't watch necessarily, but she heard, and I think she, as she said, she really respects him as an athlete, and interesting to hear. As you said, she's in her own sort of comeback. So,
yeah, I think that with Tiger, we all know the backstory, and we all know the context and the redemption, but I think you raise a good point, Jamie. Just strictly from an age and time perspective, 43 years old, and 2008 was his last major. I mean,
right.
2008, we could have fun with this. I mean, I looked it up. Well, I was watching, you know, Ana Ivanovic was ranked number one. That was, I think, a few days after. I think that was the week after the 2008 French Open. So we have not had Rafa Nadal win a major outside of Paris in 2008. Serena Williams had 8 majors. You know, we could, whatever. Felix,
right.
OJ, Aliassi, I mean, was
yeah,
7 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah.
We can have fun with this. I mean, Obama hadn't been elected yet. But point is, that's a long, long time, even for someone as magnificently skilled as Tiger Woods.
Right, and I think
that's a long time to go without majors.
I think it's an interesting compare and contrast to continued excellence, you know, at you know, from a young age to an older age. For him, he was so good, so young, and obviously had this peak, and then really came crashing down.
That's a downfall.
And then now he you know, has slowly climbed back up. And, you know, he wasn't – it's not like he's been doing great for years and years. So I think that whole concept, too, is just really remarkable. When we talk about Serena sustaining even through all the things and Federer sustaining, yeah.
You're preempting my question. I mean, one thing I'd say about Tiger is that, to me, it's sort of interesting how that breaks down. I mean, part of it is just sort of the morality tale, right? And
right.
The image, we all know
what
he went through. I mean, part of it is I think that some of this Thanksgiving fire hydrant story – you know, he's been to rehab. I mean, I think some of the two has masked the fact that he's had some really serious injuries. I mean, we talk about Nadal and his knee. You pick a tennis player, you pick about Nadal and his knees. I mean, Tiger Woods has had, I think it was 4 back surgeries and a neck surgery. I mean, this is serious business where people were saying he walks around like an old man, and what's he going to look like when he's 45 years old? So I think strictly physically, this has been a remarkable recovery. And then again, I mean, this was one of the transcendency. I'm going to I try not to go here all the time, but 1997, depress me and tell me how old you were. I mean, this I'll just say that as someone who I've actually got a few years on Tiger, I mean, this was an absolutely transcending, transfixing sports story. I mean, it was probably Michael Jordan number one, but Tiger was 1A.
Right.
And in my lifetime, and older people say Muhammad Ali. But to me, I mean, it's Jordan 1, Tiger 1A. And we're talking more than Kobe, and we're talking more than Steph Curry and Ronaldo. I mean, go down the list. This is just a remarkable story, no matter how often it's told. That fall from grace was like nothing I've ever seen. And
right,
then again,
right.
If you said at age 43, with everything he's been through and 4 back surgeries later, he'd be winning. I think you're absolutely right. I think you can probably safely say we're not going to have a moment like that in sports for the rest of the year. Let me I'll give you my riff later. But you want to have out a mailbag question I was given, which
sure.
is hypothetically, if Serena Williams, after all she has been through and now coming back from maternity leave, if she were to win a major, had she beaten Naomi Osaka? And I think the question I don't have in front of me. I mean, I think the question was phrased sort of subsequent to that. So if Serena Williams wins a major now, Where does that rank? How does that compare to the Tiger Woods winning the Masters story from Sunday? What do you think's a bigger comeback? What do you think's a bigger story?
Well, I think, we just mentioned the Tiger fall from grace and that part of the story is something I think we could talk about for hours. I think that's a beast of its own. There's a lot of opinions to be had there. I'm split. Like I said earlier, I think it's good for him to show that somebody can come back from that sort of reputational disaster. But I don't know. I think it's very different. Serena's motherhood and everything that she's went through in her career, I think, is a very different situation than what Tiger went through. But because Serena has, I think she was so dominant for so long, and number one, no one could beat her. And then she, stepped away from the game, had Olympia, and came back and hasn't won, and she's faltered, but she's gotten there and proven she can sort of fight her way back, but she hasn't won. I think that winning a major now would be a pretty big deal, because I think a lot of people thought that she was going to come back and just dominate again.
Yeah, right.
And
no,
she hasn't.
Been some struggle,
exactly.
And this physical struggle and
injuries. She's pulled out of tournaments, viral illness.
Some of this is just exactly that's a really good point. I mean, some of this is just physical injuries and weight distribution and getting in shape and out of shape and in shape. I think some of this is probably about your immune system. I think probably about the rigors of balancing work and play. I think that's a really good point. This isn't just about Serena running wind sprints and getting her body into shape strictly from a physique perspective.
What do you think?
I think Serena winning would be a great story. I don't think it has quite the sweep and scope of Tiger in this redemption story, but this is my one... Bill Simmons had a funny riff the other day where he sort of said you try to zig where everybody else zags, but it just sounds gratuitous with Tiger, because who among us didn't smile watching this story play out? Here's my one attempt at a zag. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
That in a large part, these comeback stories, you have to fall to have a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
In Tiger's sense, this was largely his own doing, just to some extent anyway, his own doing. Is it a little bit unfair that Roger, Rafa, Djokovic, Serena were more consistent? They did not take these wild detours. They did not go to these dark places. They didn't go to rehab. They didn't get arrested. They didn't have these tawdry tabloid stories. Roger Federer will never have a comeback story like Tiger Woods. Neither will Rafa. Even Serena getting pregnant, I would submit, is quite different from what Tiger's been through. Do you feel a little like the consistent athlete gets punished and the consistent athlete doesn't get this feel-good comeback story? I mean, Roger went 5 years without winning a major, but it's not like our public... I was just writing about this for the mailbag, because I think I might have at this. It's not like Roger's... Our image of him changed. It's not like he descended into this dark place where we all wondered what he was really about. No, he came close, and he was still in the top five, and he was still Roger, and life was good. Novak had a rough 2017. He did not have a Tiger Woods rough 17. Serena's had her ups and downs, but they have not compared to Tiger Woods' ups and downs. Is there something to this point that the athletes, and I'm thinking specifically of the tennis players, who have been more consistent, haven't made messes of their personal lives, haven't taken these wild detours, that in a weird way, they're depriving themselves of this comeback narrative that we all fell in love with on Sunday?
Knee surgeries and birth complications are just not good enough to overcome. No, that's what I agree with you. That's what I'm saying, is that Tiger Woods' story has so much more heft to it because of all of the things he's been through personally. There's an argument to say that kind of thing shouldn't matter when it comes to, on the field results, right? But it does, and it plays a huge role. And I think because those personal downfalls and all of that, they extend beyond sports. They go into, Entertainment Weekly picks it up, and they're just it's a huge deal when somebody like that steps in. They cross over into this celebrity spotlight. And
can I ask you a personal question?
Yes.
You can edit this out if this is a bridge too far. But I'm curious, as a female, as a woman in this industry, I don't know. I mean, we can sort of talk about it in a Me Too context if you want. Anything about this Tiger Woods story sticking in your craw? Or I mean, can he redemption is the word Jim Nantz used. I mean, can he redeem himself?
I think, I mean, I said it earlier, I go in both ways on things when it comes to redeeming himself or his comeback. I think it's been so long that I think a lot of people probably forget a lot of the details of the situations that he went through and what he did. And so I think, you know, it's really just a time heals kind of thing. It does bother me a little bit because I actually recently was reading back from those articles from Thanksgiving 2009 and all that stuff. And so I almost have those details a little bit fresher in my mind, probably more than others. So it does bother me a little bit. I do think he and everyone, for the most part, almost deserves a chance to redeem themselves and find a way. I don't think that a sporting achievement necessarily redeems himself in that way. You know, I think it's two different things. He has an injury and he comes back from injury through a sporting achievement like he did on Sunday. That's one aspect of it. I think redeeming his personality and his reputation from his personal life is another situation. A lot of the whole reason why, or part of the reason why a lot of that happened to him was because he was so just overwhelmed by his celebrity and his, you know, dealing with all the things that came with his accomplishments.
Right.
So
right.
Now that he's back at that point, is he going to deal with it differently? I think that's the biggest test, and that's ultimately how he redeems himself in that area.
Good answer.
Thanks.
We didn't rehearse this. You didn't know I was coming with that. That is a good impromptu answer right
Thank
there.
You.
Let me ask you, as long as we're tapping into your expertise.
Oh, boy.
This is more age and technology and not gender. Slow weekend. I mean, I was thinking, what would we talk about in tennis?
Right.
Bit of a slow week again. April's a weird tennis month, and we're transitioning into clay. We, as we talked about with Petra, we're now up to 18 winners in 18 events. I was surprised by your answer, by the way. I mean, one reason, we've talked about this, you and I have talked about this. I think one reason why this parity is appealing to me on the women's side is that there may be parity, but there's a lot of variation represented. I'm not sure we've seen that. I would submit that the 18 different winners represent an awfully wide swath of tennis playing and abilities and countries and ages. And I think that's one reason why this parity seems to work right now. And she raised a good point, too. It's not just on the women's side. To take Roger Federer out of the equation, he won, of course, Miami and Dubai. And every men's event has had a different winner as well. So maybe it's just where we are as a sport. More different winners this weekend. Amanda Anisimova won a small event as a teenager, which is in keeping with a theme from this year.
But didn't beat a seeded player, but I think
yeah,
you know,
exactly. This was not a the 27 Yankees. This was not Murderer's Row. She had to
but
go
good
through.
Good for her. I think
good for her. And
that's
you know
a big
what?
Step.
It's also strategic. I mean, what's one thing that everyone says about Kornikova? She never won a title.
Mm-hmm.
She could have entered some 250, you know, some right, smaller
right.
level event and never had to deal with that. So good for Amanda Anisimova. Whatever she does, she'll not have that attached to her.
It's a good point because I think it shows that the people around her perhaps are thinking about that
right.
sort of thing.
And she probably got an appearance fee. But the what you know what struck me in tennis a couple of them. One of them was Sasha Bajin now back to coaching. Didn't take him long to find another gig. I think that's
Mladenovic.
An interesting one now with Mladenovic, Serbian connection. But she's a player. I mean, it was a player who 2 years ago people were picking to win the French Open. So it's been a bit of a struggle, but he's sort of buying on the dip. That's an interesting move. The other thing that I wanted to, this is my segue. I was very struck by, do you follow Belinda Bencic on Twitter? It's
a
bit of a random question. But
indirectly.
You should. She's terrific. And she's very witty. And the past few days, she has had at her trolls. And she has retweeted these horrible remarks that have been directed to her. And she's diffused them with humor. And I think it's really effective. I mean, on the one hand, it's just revealing how loathsome people can be. And she loses a match. And they say, oh, you stupid. You cost me $1,000. And she'll right back, boy, lend me some money. I'm broke, too. I think, first of all, it's interesting. We talk about social media bullying and what I think women athletes in particular have to go through. And she has made this very apparent and revealed and exposed just how awful people can be. But also, I think this idea of responding with humor is very effective in delegitimizing To me, it just seems like it works. I think it's very smart. And I wanted to ask you, this is my segue, as a, do you call yourself a digital native?
A digital native.
You are far tech savvier than just about anyone else on this floor. So I ask you, as a fan of tennis and someone who is very tech savvy, 5 best social media games in tennis. What do you got?
Games? You mean people?
Oh, I mean, who's got the best? Yeah, who's got? Oh, Jamie. You didn't want to edit that out. Who's got the strongest social media presence in
tennis? I'm going to have a sip of coffee.
Give us your top 5.
I love this question. I have lots of good ones for this. I think we can start with obvious. Roger Federer is very good at Twitter, but we don't really have to talk much about it. But there is a not Roger Federer account that everyone should be following because it's very funny.
Right.
PseudoFed is very good. There will be random times comes to the feed. I get a good laugh. So that's a good one. Not a real player, but we'll get that one out of the way.
You like Roger though.
Yeah, I think
it's self-effacing, and it's a great insight into
something about Federer using emojis.
No, and you get the feeling there are going to be 4 kids that are going to be like, "Dad," but it's to me it's very endearing, and there's no too cool for school. What else you got?
Andy Roddick is one of my favorite Twitter people. Not a current player, but
he counts.
He does count. He's equally good at, as you say about Belinda Bencic, a little diffusing some people saying things at him, or just he'll take random comments about people and completely just tear down takes, which is really fun. He's got some good sense of humor. When we've had him on the podcast before, good friend of yours, so I give him a nod on this one too.
Good one. Who else you got?
This is a recent one. This is a personal recent favorite. On Instagram, we'll switch over. But Gael Monfils and Elena Svitolina have now started.
Oh yeah, it's Gem Life.
This Instagram account, because they are now dating. I will tell you a fun fact that I was at the Taste of Tennis event last year before the U.S. Open, and I was just walking around, standing there, and Serena. I think it was right around where Serena was on stage, and I happened to be standing next to Svitolina, and I just was like looking over, and I see her. I mean, I wasn't snooping, but I see her saving Gael Monfils into her phone. Like, she was standing there in the middle of the place and she was typing it into her address book. And I thought it was very interesting. I was like, wow, that's really funny. Like, they're getting each other's numbers.
If only you knew. Jamie, you were at the cutting edge.
And so here we are. They are now together. And they have this Instagram with...
They have this wacky Instagram page that Federer photobombed.
60,000 followers? Yeah, Federer... Yeah,
you saw that?
It's good. It's a fun little insight into a little bit of the traveling and the little things that happen on tour between the two of them. So, it's a decent one.
It strikes me as such... I mean, they seem very supportive of each other, and the social media presence is cool. Two athletes at fairly different... Yeah. In their career, it's
also
an interesting sort of mashup. But
24, 25, and he's like 30 something, 32.
He's young in heart.
Yeah, that is very true.
What? Who else you got?
Who else I got? I'm gonna throw a controversial Nick Kyrgios in here.
I'll buy that. Yeah, I'm buying.
I think he can. He probably needs to stop checking his Twitter feed so often, but he's pretty good at it, maybe for that reason. And I think it's funny that he's always retweeting or commenting on so many NBA things. I think his love for the NBA is particularly interesting. And
I'll give you a curious one.
About curious.
Oh, he had a run at me a while ago. No, I got no problem with that. And I'm with you. I mean, I think his feed is revealing, and I think that he'll have it. The media, he'll retweet. I mean, I'm with you on that. Remember when he had the match with Mo Leani, and I'm blanking on the opponent. Oh, Herbert, the French player.
Yes.
So he's if you go and check the TikTok on this, mm-hmm. Donna Vekic had some tweet about, you know, I always thought the umpires were supposed to be neutral. I'm paraphrasing here, obviously.
Right.
There's some history there, obviously, with Kyrgios and Donna Vekic. But then Kyrgios has back at it with Donna Vekic. And if you look at the TikTok, he must have checked his phone on the walk from the court back into the locker room. I mean, the match ended literally 5 minutes later. He's having a Twitter feud. And to me, say what you will about Kyrgios, I think that reinforced to me how athletes and social media is a story that Sports Illustrated really ought to do. It is such a dimension of sports. These athletes they've got their membrane of yes men and of sycophants, but this unfiltered social media feed, they are slaves to at some level.
I don't know where Adam Silver, well, I think it was Adam Silver. He was at a conference somewhere and he was talking
about the Sloan conference with Bill. Yeah, with Simmons.
And he was talking about how literally he's like, I can't get like something, someone needs to change something because all they care about is their Instagram feeds. All these guys care about is going on social media. And, you know, I think the one quote probably got pulled out of a larger conversation that they were having. But it's I agree.
No, we were doing this Warriors piece. And one thing I heard again and again was that social media is a real dimension of this team. And players pick up their phone and they go through their mentions and they read, you need to shoot more, or you need to get a better situation, or your agent's doing you wrong. And it really sticks in their craw. And I see it in tennis, too. I mean, talk to coaches. I probably am not liberty. I should probably double check before naming names. But yeah, I've spoken to a number of coaches who say, listen, well, I can't get through an hour of practice without the player walking over, getting a sip of water and checking their phone. I can't get through to my player. By the time I see them in the locker room, they have already scrolled through Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So, we should do that as a story at Sports Illustrated. All right, we're taking a big detour here. We need one more social media account.
I think I gave you a lot. I want
to
hear.
No,
some
I just want to give. I want to give a nod to Bencic, because I thought that in one sort of clever sleight of hand, she both gave some sense of what players have to deal with and how sports gambling has infected this sport, and she also I think I tweeted this out. There was a story in the New York Times about a neo-Nazi parade. Stick with me here. A neo-Nazi parade in Germany, and the counter-protesters, instead of angrily holding up signs, the counter-protesters wore crazy wigs, and they goose-stepped with the Nazis, and it basically had the effect of completely delegitimizing the other side and turning the whole thing into a circus. I can repost that. It's a great piece of social psychology. It basically how to meet and how to confront evil, and one way you do it is to not take it seriously, to poke fun at it and to delegitimize it. And I think that's something perhaps inadvertently that Belinda Bencic did.
Madison Keys does that as well. I've seen her.
That's been a big issue for Madison Keys.
Exactly. I was going to say, I think she's probably another one that we can mention. I think she's very good at Twitter. She's very open. She's very funny. I think she posted something the other day about buying a chair at Target, and she severely underestimated the size of the chair and overestimated the ability of her trunk. So fun stuff like that. And she's has, I think it's a partnership with Fearlessly Girl, which is, you know, to help young women and in this kind of social media age deal with all these things. So I think she deserves a nod in that, in the same way, you know, Bencic has come at some of her haters. I think Madison has had to deal with a lot of that, and she's openly talked about it as well.
We will nod to Madison Keys. Madison Keys and Bencic, by the way, two of the 18 winners that we have been discussing this year on the WTA Tour. All right. Thanks, Jamie. Thanks for your 20-something perspective. Always appreciated. Thanks to Petra Kvitova for spending a few moments with us. We'll talk to her again. Always a pleasure speaking with her. We will have another guest next week. Jamie, take us out. People were interested. Where might they subscribe to this podcast, and what ought they to do when they get there?
They can go on iTunes or Stitcher, Google Podcasts, however they listen to their podcasts, and they should leave us a review. I haven't checked the reviews in a while. Reminds me.
No, nor I, but we'll do that right now.
Is that like reading the comments?
Yeah, exactly. don't read the comments. Don't check the reviews. But no, thanks, everyone. No, the one thing I will say.
Good feedback.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the feedback, and we are not groveling for compliments. Some of the feedback about guests in particular is always very appreciated. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Jamie. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
We'll do it again next week.